This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Be seated. Okay, we're back on the record. I'm going to turn to you, Mr. Frelick. First of all, other than potentially your clients, do you have any other witnesses?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay, and then have you had an opportunity to speak with your client about her testimony at this phase of the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. I spent extra time with my client, Ms. Shabusiness. We talked about her right to testify at phase two of this proceeding, the NGI phase of the proceeding. She understands what that means. She understands that she could take the witness stand and answer questions and testify about various topics. I've also explained to her that she has a right not to testify, that she doesn't have to get up on the witness stand, that she can stay at counsel table and remain silent. That's her right. That's her choice. I gave her time to think about it, to reflect on it. She had questions. I answered those questions. We had a good dialogue and conversation on this particular topic. She's advised me that she wishes to waive her right to testify. She's not going to take the witness stand.
Mr. Shabusiness, your attorney tells me that you choose not to testify at this phase. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. You understand that you have a right to testify, and you also have a right not to testify, and if you don't testify, your choosing not to testify can't be used against you. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You understand those rights belong not to Mr. Frelick. They don't belong to me. They don't belong to the state. Those rights are yours and yours alone. Do you understand that?
I do.
Do you feel you need any more time to talk to Mr. Frelick about this decision?
No, I don't.
And it's your decision not to testify here today. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any further inquiry the state would like me to make regarding that?
No, thank you.
Mr. Frelick, any further inquiry you'd like me to make regarding that issue?
Only if the court would inquire as to whether she felt any pressure or coercion in order to make this decision.
Mr. Shabusiness, do you feel you've had any pressure by anybody or coercion to make this choice?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge.
I'm satisfied that Ms. Shabusiness understands her rights. She's had a full opportunity to speak with her attorney about it. And she's made a choice here today, freely and voluntarily, not to testify at this phase of the trial. And I'm going to accept that, and we are going to move forward. So I think how the matter would unfold then is when the jury comes back in, I'll ask Mr. Frelick if he has any further witnesses to call. Based upon what I've heard, the answer will be no. The defense rests, and then we would move to the state. And as I'm presuming the state is ready to call its first witness.
Yeah.
Okay. And then... I did want to place on the record because I was advised that when we excused Dr. Layton, we weren't on the record, but there was no objection to Dr. Layton. It's too late now. Both parties indicated there was no objection to her being excused, and that's what I did. Is that correct, Mr. Frelick?
That's accurate.
And Mr. Saunders?
Yes.
Okay, and then I just want to confirm, we don't need to go over these now. The jury has already been waiting a little longer than I told them they'd have to, but I did place on the on counsel table copies of proposed jury instructions, and then also just recently copies of what comes in the form of jury instruction 605B, but it's not a jury instruction, it's a proposed verdict form. Did both parties get a copy of those, Mr. Frelick?
Yes.
And Mr. Saunders?
Yes.
Okay, we can discuss those at the conclusion of evidence, but at this time then I'm going to bring the jury in. All rise to the jury.
That's good. Yeah.
Okay, be seated. All right. We are back on the record this afternoon. The case is still with the defense. Mr. Frelick, do you have any other witnesses to call?
Your Honor, the defense rests at this time. No other witnesses.
All right. Then the matter turns to the state. I don't know, Mr. Lizay or Mr. Saunders, who's going to be questioning the first witness. So, Mr. Lizay, your first witness.
Your Honor, the state calls Dr. Matthew Seipel.
Okay. Dr. Seipel, if you want to step forward here. And
do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter now before the court, so help you God?
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Matthew Seipel. My last name is spelled S-E-I-P-E-L.
Okay, then the witness is yours, Mr. Lizay.
Good afternoon, Dr. Seipel.
Good afternoon.
How are you currently employed?
I am employed as a licensed psychologist with Behavioral Consultants Incorporated and the Wisconsin Forensic Unit, where I perform forensic mental health assessments on a full-time basis.
How long have you been with the Wisconsin Forensic Unit?
I began with the Behavioral Consultants and the Forensic Unit in September of 2020 as a postdoctoral forensic psychology fellow, and I've continued with those organizations since February 2022 when I obtained psychology licensure in the state of Wisconsin.
And you indicated that your full-time duties is to perform forensic evaluations, is that right?
Yes.
What types of evaluations do you typically perform?
I complete competency to proceed examinations, mental responsibility or NGI evaluations, evaluations of people who are petitioning for conditional release from the state mental health institutes, as well as legal guardianship, and several types of juvenile evaluations.
And you indicated that is your full-time employment. Do you know about how many of each of those evaluations you might perform in a calendar year?
And so I would say in total, I've completed over the past 3 years roughly 1,000 across those types of evaluations. So in a calendar year, it would break down to typically at least 300 evaluations. About three quarters of those would be competency evaluations. And then roughly, I would say another 10 to 20% would be NGI evaluations.
You indicated that you are a licensed psychologist in the state of Wisconsin?
Yes.
What does that process entail?
And so to become a licensed psychologist, one needs to complete a doctorate in psychology from an institution that is either accredited by the American Psychological Association or determined to meet equivalency of those accreditation standards. And then at the time that I obtained licensure, 1 year of full-time postdoctoral supervised practice was required. I believe that standard has changed, but that was the standard for licensure at the time that I gained my license.
And you indicated that you must have that doctoral degree. Where did you obtain that degree?
That was from Iowa State University.
And do you have, can you just go through briefly your education prior to that degree?
I completed a bachelor's degree in psychology from Cardinal Stritch University, as well as a Master of Science in Clinical Mental Health Counseling from Marquette University before completing my doctorate at Iowa State.
And, Doctor, through your professional work at the Wisconsin Forensic Unit, did you have an opportunity to work on the present case, State of Wisconsin versus Taylor Shabusiness?
Yes, I did.
How did you become involved in that case?
And so I was requested to complete two court-ordered competency evaluations in this matter.
When you say court-ordered, does that mean that the court is the party that retained you rather than either the state or the defense?
Correct.
Yeah, and when was that first evaluation, when was the first report filed?
That was in November of 2022.
And when was the second report filed?
That was earlier this month in July of 2023.
Can you, you mentioned that you were retained by the court to do a competency evaluation, and earlier you also mentioned that you do NGI evaluations. Can you explain for the jury the difference between those two types of evaluations?
Yeah, so those are two entirely different types of evaluations that are guided by two different state statutes. And so competency pertains to a defendant's current mental status. It is independent of the mental state at the time of the alleged offenses, and it pertains to whether or not the defendant presently has substantial mental capacity to understand the pending proceedings or to meaningfully assist in their defense. Whereas the state statute for NGI dictates it is about the defendant's mental state at the time of the alleged offenses. And specifically, Was there a qualifying mental disease or defect that contributed to a substantial lack of capacity to appreciate wrongfulness of conduct or to conform conduct to the standards of the law?
And you indicate that you have substantial present experience in both of those types of evaluations. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, they are different evaluations with different standards. However, are the materials used to evaluate those often similar?
I would say that collateral records are critical in both evaluations, although in competency, those records would focus most heavily on the present time and present functioning, whereas for NGI, it would be focused upon functioning at the time of the alleged offenses.
And can you talk about the records that you reviewed regarding Ms. Shabusiness for each of the two competency evaluations that you performed?
Yes, and so I reviewed the criminal complaint for the underlying matter. I reviewed all previous psychological evaluations that were completed in reference to this case, including competency and NGI reports from multiple examiners. At both times, I reviewed her contemporary treatment records from the Brown County Jail. And during the most recent evaluation, I also had the opportunity to review a discharge summary from a treatment episode at the Nicolet Psychiatric Center in 2021.
Subsequent to the evaluation, were you also provided with copies of materials from an inpatient stay at Balance Psychiatric or two different inpatient stays at Balance Psychiatric?
Yes, after submitting my most recent report, defense counsel provided me discharge summaries pertaining to those two episodes of inpatient care.
And were all of those records taken into consideration when you either rendered your opinion or provided testimony at competency hearings in this case?
I would say that all of the sources that I mentioned initially were considered in reaching my opinion in my report. And then those Bellin records I did consider in preparing for testimony, but they did not alter any of the opinions offered in my report.
And in addition to reviewing collateral records, did you conduct personal interviews with Ms. Shabusiness?
Yes, I did.
And what were the dates of those interviews?
And so the most recent interview, I'm just referencing my report here, was on July 12th of 2023. And for the initial interview, I would reference to refresh my memory, that report from November of 2022, the date of the interview was November 17th, 2022.
And were both of those in-person interviews?
Yes.
And can you estimate approximately how long you met with Ms. Shabusiness in those interviews?
On both occasions, it was roughly 90 minutes, perhaps give or take a few minutes.
Doctor, when you were reviewing the records and ultimately when you had to come to an opinion in this case, had you encountered prior diagnoses that had been assigned to Ms. Shabusiness at various points in time?
Yes.
Were you aware that at some point in time she had received a bipolar diagnosis?
Yes.
And do you recall where that came from?
That was during her inpatient treatment at the Nicolet Psychiatric Center in 2021.
And doctor, what did you note with respect to that particular diagnosis? Were there any concerns when you saw that?
Yes, a concern I had with that diagnosis is that for one to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder, it's specifically within the diagnostic criteria for that condition that the symptoms cannot occur exclusively in the course of substance intoxication. And I noted that there's multiple collateral sources suggesting that she was abusing methamphetamine very extensively leading up to that treatment episode. So I was unable to really see how the treatment providers could have parsed out to what extent any psychiatric instability derived from the methamphetamine use versus an actual underlying mental illness.
And did you have an opportunity to review the discharge summary from Nicolet Psychiatric?
Yes.
And in that discharge summary, is there a discussion of how she presented upon arrival compared to how she presented upon her release 21 days later?
Yes, it was noted that there was a remarkable difference and that psychotic symptoms were evident upon admission, including hallucinations and very disorganized behavior, although those symptoms were determined to be largely resolved by the end of that treatment episode.
Does that suggest anything to you with respect to the substance abuse that was indicated at the outset?
And so it's, again, difficult to disentangle to what extent that improved mental status resulted from any medication she received in the facility versus her mere forced abstinence from intoxicants.
based on your professional education and experience of the types of symptoms that were noted upon arrival at Nicolet Psychiatric, can those symptoms also be associated with the methamphetamine use solely?
Yes.
So it's possible for someone to manifest those symptoms solely based on meth use without having any underlying mental health illness?
Objection. Yes. Calls for speculation.
Overruled.
Yes.
You indicated that you had the opportunity to review reports from other evaluators who met with Ms. Shabusiness and provided opinions in this case. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did you note whether or not any of the other evaluators shared similar concerns about the bipolar diagnosis assigned to her by Nicolet Psychiatric?
Yes, I noted that in Dr. Engen's mental responsibility evaluation, she took most specific and direct issue with the basis for that diagnosis, and she ultimately, in her report, offered that she did not see sufficient support to assign a diagnosis of bipolar disorder. I also noted that, in, for example, in Dr. Lucetta's competency report, while she did not necessarily completely rule out bipolar disorder, she also noted, again, that the substance abuse was a significant factor leading up to that diagnosis, and she merely essentially sought to rule out that diagnosis but did not assign it.
So I want to just sort of speak generally about bipolar. Can you describe for the jury what bipolar is and what is required to diagnose such a disorder?
Yes, and so there are two different types of bipolar disorder. There's bipolar 1 disorder, which is a more severe condition, and that is the diagnosis that has appeared in some of the records in this case. Bipolar 1 disorder is characterized predominantly by manic episodes, which are periods of it lasting at least a week, where more often than not, the individual has a significantly elevated mood. They may behave impulsively, erratically, have a decreased need for sleep. And in some instances with bipolar 1, that is alternated by depressive episodes, which typically last at least 2 weeks and are largely the opposite of mania. That means a persistently low mood, low energy, feelings of worthlessness, guilt, or hopelessness, things of that like. Whereas bipolar 2 disorder has hypomanic episodes, which are not as prolonged or severe as a manic episode. And by diagnostic criteria, someone must also experience depression in order to qualify for bipolar 2 disorder.
So is it fair to say that to diagnose someone with bipolar 1, we would have that expectation of seeing those prolonged manic episodes, at least one instance of a prolonged manic episode?
Yes, and it would need to occur outside voluntary substance intoxication.
Is it possible for a person who has been diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, is that the type of condition that could occasionally wax and wane over the course of someone's lifetime?
To the extent that someone does indeed meet diagnostic criteria for bipolar disorder, yes, there certainly can be a waxing or waning or a cyclical pattern of symptoms.
I also want to harken back to the fact that you have done NGI evaluations. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is bipolar a condition that can sometimes contribute to an opinion that someone does meet NGI criteria?
Yes, it certainly can.
And under what circumstances might you expect to see that?
Yes, and so in order to reach an opinion of supporting an NGI plea in the context of bipolar disorder, one, there would need to be a firmly established diagnosis of bipolar disorder, again, in the absence of substance intoxication, and there would need to be a very direct linkage between the symptoms of that mental illness at the time of the alleged offenses and the substantial lack of capacity to either appreciate wrongfulness or to conform conduct to the requirements of the law. It's not enough for the defendant to simply be symptomatic, but that linkage needs to be established with the lack of capacity.
When you talk about establishing that linkage between the crimes alleged and the mental illness that's been assigned to an individual, what sorts of facts or circumstances do you consider when you do NGI evaluations?
And so there would need to be converging data sources indicating that indeed the defendant was symptomatic of that legitimate mental illness at the time, and there would need to be, conceptually, it would need to make sense for the alleged misconduct. There would need to be some sort of reason that mania, for instance, would have caused that behavior. There would need to be evidence to suggest that the person was fundamentally unable to control their behavior. And so again, that would typically comprise a pattern that extends beyond that one momentary act, but it would need to be a broader pattern encompassing that time frame.
So if you are evaluating whether someone's bipolar disorder might be causal of the criminal offenses, would it be significant to you to evaluate the defendant's symptoms or how someone presents immediately before and immediately after the alleged offenses?
Yes, those would be critical time frames in which to gather as much data as possible.
Is that because one would expect that someone with bipolar wouldn't manifest those symptoms solely for a short period of time, but typically over a much longer period?
Yes, that is correct.
Objection calls for speculation.
I think it calls for his professional opinion.
Yes, it would be expected to see, again, a symptom duration longer than just the mere moments of committing a criminal offense.
Doctor, I want to quickly return back to some of the other records that had been mentioned. You indicated that you did have an opportunity to review the medical records from Bell and Health from two different stays that Ms. Shabusiness had, one in 2012 and one in 2014?
Yes.
And I'll first call your attention to the 2012 records, if you recall those. Do you remember if Ms. Shabusiness was assigned a diagnosis by the treatment providers at Bell and Health at the outset of her stay in 2012?
She was assigned a diagnosis of mood disorder not otherwise specified.
So she was not assigned a bipolar diagnosis at that time, is that correct?
Correct.
And then in 2014, did she likewise have some sort of diagnosis following her three-day stay in Bellin?
She was again assigned a diagnosis of mood disorder not otherwise specified, and they did add, which is not a diagnosis per se, but they noted alongside the diagnosis a history of psychosis. But in looking closer at the records, that history of psychosis derived squarely from an adverse medication reaction, which prompted the initial inpatient stay. So she was prescribed sertraline, and then only after that did she begin to have psychotic symptoms, and those symptoms resolved as soon as that medication was discontinued.
Again, she was not assigned a bipolar diagnosis in 2014 either.
Correct.
Dr. Seipel, you indicated that you did have an opportunity to review Dr. Litton's report from July 3rd of 2023?
Yes, I did.
And what type of report from a forensic standpoint was Dr. Litton's report?
It appeared to be a combined competency and NGI report.
In your experience and training, is it best practice for someone to engage in a combined report of both competency and NGI?
Typically, a separate report would be submitted to address each issue independently.
What are some of the reasons why you might not combine those two reports?
For one, there can be information introduced in the issue of criminal responsibility that might be inappropriate to be contained within a competency report. A competency report is not supposed to contain incriminating information with regard to the alleged offenses. But also, and from a psychological standpoint, it makes it difficult to parse out which data and which arguments are directed at each respective issue if they're addressed alongside each other in the same report.
Is it particularly concerning if you come to a conclusion that a person is not presently competent that you would also rely on that information to form an NGI opinion?
I would say that it's not inappropriate if that's a data point that is considered, but that there should not be a strong linkage in that reasoning, as again, it's two different legal issues pertaining to two different time points.
Doctor, when you looked at that report as it relates to NGI and Dr. Litton's report, I'm just going to ask you generally, did you have any concerns with the methodology that was shown in that particular report?
I found that it seemed appropriate data sources were consulted, at least that's what the methods section suggested in that report, although there was essentially no discussion or review of the discovery materials that were reviewed, and really no account from a defendant's perspective of the alleged misconduct, which are very critical pieces of information that would always be included in an NGI report.
So those pieces of information that you just discussed, like the account of the offense and the specific discovery materials outlining the offense, why is it important to include that type of information in the report?
Because, again, the statute for NGI pertains squarely to the moments of the alleged offense, and that is the data that most directly captures those moments. And so it becomes somewhat of a black box issue if those moments are not discussed in the report and inferences instead are appearing to be made based upon presentation at other time points. That's not sound professional reasoning with regard to the issue of NGI.
And I want to talk about information being based on other time points. Did it appear to you that Dr. Litton relied very strongly on her personal observations of Ms. Shabusiness in the interview?
I would say it seemed that the symptoms that were portrayed during the moments of that interview seemed to weigh heavily, as well as the mere fact of a bipolar diagnosis being assigned roughly a year before the alleged offenses.
Were you able to determine whether or not Dr. Litton actually assigned a diagnosis herself?
It seemed implicit in the report that she concurred with the bipolar diagnosis, although it was not explicitly stated. You know, for instance, I am assigning the defendant a diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
Is that typical in your experience to not assign a diagnosis during such an evaluation?
In an NGI evaluation, as the identification of a qualifying mental disease or defect is critical and necessary to support an NGI plea, it would be essential for the diagnosis to be very explicitly indicated.
And that was not done here?
I would say, again, it was not explicit. Rather, it was more so inferred, being embedded in text.
And, Doctor, the report from Dr. Litton, does that include a relatively lengthy or specific discussion of the observations of Dr. Litton from the interview that occurred in June of 2023?
Yes, the greatest detail seemed to pertain to that which would have been her second contact with the defendant.
And you personally had contact with the defendant within about a month of that particular interview. Is that fair?
It would have been roughly like 3 or 4 weeks per my estimation.
The observations that Dr. Litton is making of the defendant, her actions, her behaviors, her psychotic state, did you witness those same things when you met with Ms. Shabusiness?
I did not notice the evident distraction that was evidently apparent during the interview with Dr. Litton. The defendant easily maintained focus and was able to supply coherent, relevant responses to questioning. She remained behaviorally appropriate and was able to engage in detailed discussion of her legal situation. There was a brief moment in which she referenced claiming to see a supposed green train within the room, which is something that was evidently very distracting during the interview with Dr. Litton. I essentially ignored when that symptom was mentioned, and there was no further mention of it thereafter, and there was no evidence that she was in any way distracted by that or any similar psychotic symptom.
Did you form a conclusion with respect to the psychotic manifestations that Ms. Shabusiness was outwardly claiming to have?
I found that there was not sufficient support for assigning a diagnosis such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia that could presumably underlie those symptoms.
Did you have any concerns about the validity of the claimed symptoms?
Yes, I did.
And what were those concerns?
And so my concerns were manifold. There has been a remarkable inconsistency in presentation over the pendency of this case in terms of the symptoms the defendant has claimed to forensic examiners versus to clinical providers within the jail. And even during very similar time frames, she's offered contradictory remarks. And apparently only during the interview with Dr. Litton has anyone observed her during the pendency of this case to seem to be preoccupied with internal stimuli. That's not something that I have observed, and jail providers have noted that even in the isolated instances where the defendant has endorsed hallucinations, they have viewed no outward indication.
I would object only because that calls for hearsay. I apologize, but overruled.
I forgot where you were in your answer, but if you're...
Ask another question.
Sure. Had other doctors who evaluated the defendant shared concerns that you reported about the possibility of feigning or embellishing symptoms?
Yes.
And who was that?
I noted that first in Dr. Lucetta's competency report, as part of a competency instrument that she administered to the defendant, embedded within that were validity indices. That means they were testing items which sought to determine the credibility of the defendant's endorsement of psychiatric symptoms. And her responses to those items suggested an elevated probability of a non-credible response style with regard to endorsing psychiatric symptoms. And similarly, when Dr. Engen completed her NGI evaluation, she administered the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, or MMPI as it's widely known, and the extent of her invalid responses on that instrument made it where her clinical profile could not be interpreted, because her validity skills for that instrument suggested she was grossly exaggerating psychiatric symptoms in a manner that would be extreme and inconsistent, even for a patient with legitimate schizophrenia.
And did you note whether or not Dr. Leighton performed any such psychological testing to determine the validity of the symptoms that she was observing from Ms. Shabusiness?
I found no mention of any type of instrument for symptom validity within her report.
Was that surprising to you?
I would say yes, in general, but especially specifically given that those psychotic symptoms really seem to be the crux of her opinion regarding the issues of both competency and criminal responsibility, and especially in light of prior testing data that cast significant doubt over the legitimacy of those symptoms. So under those circumstances, it would be extremely unusual for an examiner to not administer testing.
Now, did you administer testing of Ms. Shabusiness when you met with her?
I was prepared to administer testing upon entering the evaluation, although her clinical presentation suggested such testing would not be necessary to reach an opinion regarding her adjudicative competency.
Can you explain that maybe just in a little more layman's details?
Yes, and so to the extent that the defendant would have presented similarly as she did with Dr. Leighton, for instance, presenting herself as very distracted by hallucinations, unable to supply linear or coherent responses, then I would have administered psychological testing to see where the validity lied with such symptoms. Although she did not portray those symptoms and with relative ease was able to discuss her legal situation in a rational manner, so the validity of symptoms became a moot point. The results of that testing would have had no influence on my opinion regarding competency.
Essentially, you didn't need to test the validity of the symptoms because you didn't see the symptoms.
Correct.
Now, Doctor, you also had an opportunity to review the report of Dr. Engen, which I believe you previously mentioned. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, Dr. Engen's report is a report on NGI and not competency. Is that right?
Yes, it is specifically and solely to the issue of NGI.
Now, some of the shortfalls of Dr. Leighton's report that you already pointed out, did you see those same concerns in the report of Dr. Engen?
I did not.
Can you compare or contrast the methodology that Dr. Engen used to the methodology used by Dr. Leighton?
And so in Dr. Engen's report, I found to be consistent with my training, experience, and my understanding of best practice in the field of forensic psychology, and that she engaged in a thorough review and detailed in her report the discovery materials. She supplied a detailed accounting of the defendant's personal account to her of the index offenses. She reviewed medical records from the Nicolet Psychiatric Treatment Center that, again, would have been in that time period leading up to this offense, and she administered psychological testing to aid in determining the validity of any of the psychiatric symptoms that the defendant claimed during the evaluation. And so that represented to me a full and comprehensive NGI evaluation.
And in contrast, did Dr. Engen's report specifically tie Ms. Shabusiness's behavior at and around the time of the offense to any mental illness or lack thereof?
Dr. Engen supplied a detailed articulation of why she ultimately did not assign a qualifying mental disease or defect diagnosis to the defendant, and then she in turn articulated why she did not believe there was any support for the conclusion that outside of voluntary substance intoxication, the defendant would have substantially lacked capacity to appreciate wrongfulness or conform her conduct to the requirements of the law.
I think we touched on this earlier as it related to general diagnoses of a mental health condition, but can you talk briefly about the impact that acute substance intoxication has on attempting to determine whether or not someone would be NGI?
And so according to the Wisconsin jury instructions, a mental disturbance brought on by voluntary substance intoxication is not considered to be a qualifying mental disease or defect. And so to the extent that an examiner cannot rule out the sequelae of that voluntary intoxication as being the primary contributing factor to behavior, then the reason would dictate that an NGI plea cannot be supported.
Thank you, Doctor. No further questions at this time.
Cross-examination, Mr. Fralick.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Seipel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You prepared two reports concerning Taylor Shebusiness, correct?
Yes.
One in November of 2022 and then one in July of 2023, correct?
Yes.
And you received police reports, correct?
I did not review the police reports.
Okay. Did you review the criminal complaint?
Yes.
Did you have a chance to review any video footage from the incident on February 22nd or February 23rd of 2022?
I did not.
In this particular case, did you administer the two gold standard tests, the MMPI and the MCMI?
I did not administer either of those instruments.
Okay. Yet you criticized Dr. Lighton for not doing it, correct?
Yes.
Now, you've been a licensed psychologist since February of 2022, correct?
Yes.
That's when you obtained your license to practice and do evaluations and reports and all of that, correct?
My license enabled me to practice independently, although I performed all of these evaluations under supervision from September 2020 up until that time.
Okay. In September of 2020, that's when you were a fellow?
That's when I began my postdoctoral fellowship in forensic psychology.
Okay. When you've had a chance to review Dr. Lighton's curriculum vitae, correct?
Yes.
You've had a chance to review her evaluation from July 3rd of 2023, correct?
Yes.
As far as experience level, she has more experience than you. Is that fair?
I would say she's been a practicing psychologist longer, although the extent to which she has conducted NGI evaluations, I don't know if she has more experience than me.
You understand that she worked at Mendota Mental Health in the past, correct?
Yes, and typically NGI evaluations are not performed for patients already within the state mental health institute.
Okay. And with regards to Dr. Christina Engin, she works in the Wisconsin Forensic Unit as well?
Yes, she is employed by behavioral consultants in the Wisconsin Forensic Unit.
Would she be a colleague or a coworker of yours?
I would say we are similarly employed, although we practice typically in different areas of the state and have pretty minimal contact with each other.
And the two of you are aligned as far as opinions in this particular case, is that fair?
Well, we opined on different issues, so I would not agree with that statement.
But the ultimate recommendation is the same, correct?
I guess I'm not sure what you're asking, sir.
That you and her both find insufficient evidence to support the special plea, the NGI plea.
I would say I did not offer an opinion with regard to NGI, so again, I can't agree with that statement.
Okay. You've had a chance to review Brown County Jail records, correct?
Yes.
You reviewed Bell and Health records that I sent, correct?
Yes.
You had a chance to review the Nicolet Psychiatric Center records through Brown County, correct?
Yes.
You reviewed a lot of mental health records, correct?
Yes.
Fair to say that Taylor Denise Shebusiness does have a mental health history. Would that be fair?
I would say in general terms, yes. She has had contact with mental health treatment.
And fair to say that she was the subject of a civil commitment in 2021, correct?
Yes, it is my understanding that she became subject to a six-month civil commitment during the course of her inpatient treatment in 2021.
And she was found by a court of law to be mentally ill, at least in 2021. Is that fair?
According to that court order, it would suggest that, yes.
And then she was on a medication order, an order to take psychotropic medications for that same period of time, correct?
Yes, it is my understanding she was court-ordered to medication compliance.
A lot of different doctors evaluated and took a look at Ms. Shebusiness, correct?
And with respect to the pendency of this case or more generally?
Just with respect to the pendency of this case.
Yes, I would say there have been a handful of us that have completed evaluations.
Dr. Deborah Collins? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
Dr. Tracy Lucetta?
Yes.
Dr. Diane Lighton?
Yes.
Yourself?
Yes.
Dr. Christina Engine?
Yes.
With regards to Ms. Chavez's treatment at Nicolet Psychiatric Center, was she diagnosed over there in May of 2021 with bipolar disorder, current episode, manic, severe with psychotic features?
Yes, that was the diagnosis those providers assigned.
She was prescribed medications, correct?
Yes, I believe it was an antipsychotic medication that was prescribed.
Do you know if that was Aristada?
I would have to consult the records to refresh my memory.
Was it your understanding that she was prescribed a medication that would be by injection?
To the extent that it is Abilify Aristada, yes, that is a long-acting injectable medication.
It's an antipsychotic medication, correct?
Yes, with mood-stabilizing properties as well.
And fair to say that through Brown County, through Nicolet, that Ms. Business was given a diagnosis of bipolar disorder?
Yes.
She was at Nicolet for about a month, correct?
I believe it was roughly 3 weeks.
A couple weeks. And then she was discharged?
Yes.
She was discharged, you know, after she had her baby?
What was the question, sir?
Do you know, I'm sorry. Do you know if she was discharged after she had her baby?
I do not believe she gave birth during the course of that hospitalization.
Subsequent to that, she gave birth, correct?
I would again have to consult the records for the dates on that.
Okay. When you looked at all these records, did you come to find that there were some references to Ms. Chavez's suffering from paranoia?
That word was mentioned in the records on some occasions, yes.
And was it mentioned that she had experienced some delusional thoughts?
Again, that was a word that has been used in the records, yes.
And was it mentioned in some of these records that we're talking about that she did suffer from distractions, inability to focus or concentrate?
Yes, there were some notations of those concerns as well.
Was it such that, in gleaning through the records, analyzing them, that she had auditory or visual hallucinations on occasion?
Yes, and most specifically that first admission to Bellin, as well as the admission to the Nicolet Psychiatric Center, where I saw the hallucinations mentioned.
Was that mentioned in 2021?
Yes, upon her admission to Nicolet, when she had heavily been abusing methamphetamine recently.
You've been a doctor for some time. You've got a PhD. You've got a lot of education. You've had experience with different kinds of patients, correct?
Yes, many, many different kinds.
With all different sorts of problems, correct?
Yes.
And you've dealt with people who have had drug addictions and things of that sort, correct?
Yes.
You've gone to seminars with regards to how substances can affect the brain, correct?
Yes, and I taught an undergraduate course regarding the effect of substances on psychology as well.
Yeah. And would it be fair to say that substances can impact the brain, can cause organic brain damage?
I would say they can certainly cause some functional abnormalities in the brain, although the notion that drug use permanently damages the brain really is not consistently bore out in the literature the way that it is in kind of the public conception of drug use.
Drug use can also exacerbate mental health problems, correct?
It can exacerbate them or cause them of their own accord, yes.
What causes memory impairment?
There can be manifold causes for memory impairment.
Drug usage?
Certainly if there has been recent and especially significant drug use, yes, that can affect various neurocognitive capacities, including memory functioning.
How about traumatic events like loss of a mother?
I would say that can cause some difficulties with concentration, though typically would not cause amnesia in and of itself.
Is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is that a mental health condition?
Yes, it is.
Can that get worse over time if untreated?
It can, yes.
If someone has a mood disorder, is that a mental health issue?
Yes.
It's a mental defect or a mental disease?
I would say it could meet criteria as a mental disease or defect according to Wisconsin state statutes, yes.
And can that get worse over time, the mood disorder, if it's left untreated?
It can, yes.
People don't are not subjected to a civil commitment order unless they have a mental health condition, correct? Is that fair?
It would require a clinician to opine that they have a mental illness, yes.
I saw some records in Brown County. I believe it relates to the Nicolay Psychiatric Center records, that there was a problem addressed, risk for self-injury related to delusional thought process vague. Do you know what that references to?
I believe I recall seeing that verbiage in the records, but I wouldn't be able to supply context without reviewing those records.
Do you know if Ms. Shabizis had problems or issues with a delusional thought process?
At that time, it was noted that that was a symptom she was displaying upon admission to the facility, yes.
Did you have occasion to, when you met with her, to observe that she had a tangential thought disorder?
During my meetings with the defendant?
Yes.
I did not note signs of a clinically significant thought disorder, no.
How about, was that bore out with Dr. Engine or Dr. Collins?
I would say there was, again, no indications of clinically significant impairment in maintaining linear thought during those evaluations.
In your review of the Brown County progress notes from Nicolay Psychiatric Center, did it have references to Ms. Shabizis identifying demons in her life?
In terms of the Nicolay Psychiatric records?
Yes.
I do believe there was mention of some commentary of that sort, yes.
And was there a commentary that her affect appeared to be labile and inappropriate throughout group, and that she had mood changes and inappropriate facial expressions or laughing?
Yes, I did see that bore out on those records.
Did you see that when you talked with her in November of 2022 or July of this year?
I did note that there were some moments of some inappropriate grinning or perhaps very brief isolated instances of laughter. All those were short-lived and did not impair capacity for us to have a linear and meaningful discussion.
In July when you met with her, you said 90 minutes, give or take. Was it cut off for any reason? Was your interview cut off?
No, they were able to be completed on both occasions to their natural course.
Okay. This time, no other. Did you note that it indicated her affect was flat when approached?
Yes, there were some indications of a relatively flat or diminished expression in her emotional presentation, yes.
What does that stem from, do you know?
That's, again, something that can have manifold causes and could simply be someone's baseline emotional presentation as well.
Could it be related to a mental health defect or disease?
It is possible, although, again, it could also be due to many other factors.
Also in these progress notes, did you indicate, or did you review, excuse me, that she was feeling as though different bodies were going in and out of her person?
I do believe I read that in the Nicolay notes as well, yes.
Did she talk about having pressure in her head or having her head hurt?
Yes, that is a complaint that she has made at different occasions across time, yes.
And did she also indicate that she had problems with eye twitching and that her PTSD was triggered from loud noises?
I do believe I recall seeing those symptoms mentioned in the records as well.
Did you, at least in some of the, either the jail records or the Brown County records from Nicolay, that she talked about wanting to die and go to heaven to see her mom?
Yes, I do recall seeing such comments made.
And in reviewing these records, because there were a lot of them, did she indicate at least in the records when she was at Brown County at Nicolay that she was hearing voices that were that would get heavier at night?
I do believe, yes, there was a pattern of time of day seeming to impact symptoms at that time, yes.
And the time of day would be more at night, they'd be more pronounced at night than the daytime?
Per my recollection of the records, I do believe that was the pattern that was mentioned.
And she was encouraged to connect with a dual therapist to address mental health and her AODA issues, is that fair?
Yeah, consistently over time, she has been referred for substance abuse treatment, yes.
And in those records from Nicolay, it also talked about that she would have racing thoughts that would get overwhelmed and that she'd hear voices in her head?
Yes, those are symptoms I do recall seeing in the records.
There were, it's true, right, that there were discussions about her getting this Aristada injection every 4 weeks to help her?
Yes, that is the typical course in which that medication is administered, and per my recollection, I do believe that's what was ultimately prescribed.
Then there was some discussion about whether she would take the pill or take the injection, correct?
Yes, I do believe that the means of administration was discussed amongst her clinical team.
Even in the notes, it talked about, in the notes from Brown County, from Nicolay Psychiatric Center, it talked about how Ms. Shabizis would have agitation, anxiety, correct?
Yes.
And that there was a discussion about giving her Haldol, correct?
Yes, that would be another antipsychotic medication with pretty heavily sedative properties.
Do you know if that was ever given to her?
I would again have to refresh my recollection with the records.
And even in the Nicolay records, it talked about that it was a struggle to decipher what is a genuine psychiatric symptom and what is otherwise talked about as gaminess, correct?
Yes, I do believe that was a term that was employed in the records.
There were just a lot of records to review, and you have a good memory. But it also talked about Zoloft, correct?
Yes, that was mentioned specifically in her adolescent treatment records.
And Ms. Shabizis was given, apparently at Nicolay, from what you reviewed in these notes, what are her coping skills and what does she want to do to make progress with mental health? Is that fair?
I don't recall that specific information.
Okay. With regards to Dr. Lighton, she says that she believes that my client, Ms. Shabizis, qualifies for the NGI plea based on a diagnosis of a serious mental disorder. Do you understand that?
Yes, that's what she wrote in her report.
And she opines that her serious mental disorder affected Ms. Shabizis' ability to know right from wrong at the time of the offense, correct?
I would say it was relatively tersely worded, although that was what was suggested, yes.
And she also said that it affected her ability to control her behaviors. Is that fair?
Yes, that was the opinion that she reached.
You have a diabolically opposed opinion compared to Dr. Lighton, correct?
Again, I did not opine on the NGI issue.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Nothing further.
Be direct.
Just briefly, I think you were asked a great deal again about the records from Nicolet and the specific symptoms that were manifesting at that time at Nicolet. Do you know if Nicolet actually administered a blood test to determine whether or not there were substances in her system at the time she entered Nicolet?
There was either urine or blood screening performed for toxicology purposes, yes.
And she did test positive for methamphetamine?
It was methamphetamine and I believe also amphetamines and THC as well.
And did the Nicolet records show a marked improvement in her symptoms in the 3 weeks stay there?
Yes, there was a relatively linear trend over time towards psychiatric stability.
And while that might potentially be attributed to taking psychiatric medications, it might also be attributed to weaning off of the illicit substances.
I would say it's fundamentally impossible to disentangle to what extent precisely the improvement would have derived from those sources.
Okay. And you were asked questions about at points in time did Ms. Shabusiness have potentially paranoia or hallucinations or things that could potentially be associated with psychiatric conditions or psychosis. Did anyone in any of the records that you saw make such an opinion on or around February 22nd and 23rd of 2022?
In terms of those symptoms or diagnoses applying at the time of the alleged misconduct?
Correct.
I would say that from what I saw, Dr. Lighton was the only one that, and again, it wasn't really directly discussed, though at least seemed to imply that those symptoms were at play at the time of those of the incident.
Now, none of the mental health records that you saw were from February of 2022, is that correct?
I did not see any indication of her being actively involved in psychiatric treatment, so there was no reliable collateral source to corroborate those symptoms at that time.
And again, just to clarify, I think you've done a good job of this, but you were not asked to opine on the issue of whether or not an NGI offense or an NGI defense is appropriate for Ms. Shabusiness in this case.
That is correct. I was only ordered as a competency examiner.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
On those topics, Mr. Frelick?
No, Your Honor. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you, Doctor. You can step down. State's next witness.
State calls Christina Engine.
If you just step forward here, and then before you have a seat, if you could turn and face her and raise your right hand, she'll place you under oath.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, now before the court, so help you God.
Yes.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Christina Engen, Christina Engen.
Mr. Saunders, the witness is yours.
All right. Doctor, how are you employed?
As a psychologist with behavioral consultants.
And how long have you been employed with behavioral consultants?
12 years.
And do you have any degrees?
I do. I have a PhD in counseling psychology from UW-Madison, which I earned in 2010.
All right. And I guess what do you do as a psychologist with behavioral consultants?
I conduct almost exclusively criminal forensic evaluations.
And we've heard that term a few times. What is, forensic evaluations? What does that mean?
Court principals will approach a psychologist with a psycholegal question, so a psychological question that applies to the legal situation, and our job is to help answer that and to provide information to the trier of fact, the judge or the jury, to help them answer that question.
Are some of those evaluations that you're asked to conduct what are referred to as NGI evaluations?
Yes.
And I guess, what does NGI refer to?
It's for the plea of not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. It's an evaluation of criminal responsibility.
And you have performed those evaluations in the past?
Yes.
Are you able to approximate how many NGI evaluations you've completed in your career?
Over the course of 12 years, approximately 250 NGI evaluations.
And are those typically done at the request of a court?
Yes.
Have you, in your career, in those 250 evaluations, reached an opinion that somebody would be appropriate for an NGI plea?
Yes.
And contrary, have you formed the opinion that they are not, they don't fit for the NGI plea?
Yes.
All right. Doctor, do you maintain a curriculum vitae with respect to your educational background and qualifications?
Yes.
All right.
Mark Exhibit 12. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what is that?
It is my curriculum vitae.
And does that appear to be up to date?
Yes.
All right. That's a document that you prepared?
It is.
I move 12.
Any objection?
No objection.
12 will be received.
Do you maintain any licensures?
Yes. I'm licensed to practice psychology in the state of Wisconsin.
And are you also board certified?
I am.
What does that mean?
I'm board certified by the American Board of Professional Psychology. Applicants can specialize in several different areas of psychology. My area of specialty is forensic psychology.
And do you maintain any professional memberships?
Yes.
And what are some of those?
With the American Psychological Association and the Wisconsin Psychological Association.
In addition to your employment, do you also, or have you, had any teaching experience in this role?
Yes.
All right. What are some of those?
I've provided guest lectures for Marquette Law School, for trainees at Mendota Mental Health Institute, once for the Department of Corrections, psychologists.
Doctor, then I want to ask you about this case. Did you become or asked to become involved in an NGI evaluation of Taylor Shabusiness?
Yes.
And how did you become involved in that?
I was court ordered to conduct an NGI evaluation.
Were you retained by the state of Wisconsin?
Appointed by the court.
By the court, but not the district attorney's office?
Correct.
And you weren't retained by the defense either?
Correct.
It's the case that most of the evaluations you perform are at the request of the court?
That is correct.
And did you ultimately prepare a report with respect to your findings regarding that NGI evaluation?
Yes.
Doctor, I'm showing you Exhibit 13. Do you recognize that exhibit?
Yes.
And what is that?
It's a copy of my report.
Does that contain your factual findings and ultimately your opinions with respect to the NGI evaluation?
Yes.
I'd move 13.
Any objection?
Subject to cross, Your Honor, no objection.
13 will be received.
So I guess generally, can you describe the process that you undergo to conduct an NGI evaluation?
Yes, the evaluation consists of a clinical interview, so a meeting with Ms. Shabusiness. I also conducted a full discovery review, so review of all of the police reports, videos, documents of that. And then I also, in this case, reviewed her available medical records, which included a prior competency evaluation, records generated through Brown County, and then in this case, I did administer psychological testing.
Okay. So I want to first start with the clinical interview that you mentioned conducting. What date was the date that you met with Ms. Business?
So I attempted to meet with her first on October 12, 2022. However, because of her security status in the jail, I was not able to meet with her confidentially. So I returned on October 21, 2022, and we met in a conference room. That's when I conducted the interview and the psychological testing.
October 21st, 2022, would that have been about 8 months after the offense that she was charged with?
Yes.
Okay. And you also mentioned you conducted a full discovery review, and that included reviewing videos. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Was one of those interviews that you reviewed an interview of Misha Business from February 23rd of 2022?
Yes.
Was that a rather lengthy interview?
It was.
Did you review the entirety of it?
To the best of my recollection, I believe that I reviewed the vast majority of it. I would say the majority of it.
All right. Were there a lot of dead parts in the middle of it?
There were, but I thought it was important to review that video footage to listen for comments that Ms. Shabusiness would have made in the room by herself to observe her behaviors and the like.
So it wasn't just the comments that were made to law enforcement that you were looking for, but also her independent behaviors?
Correct.
And you also mentioned you reviewed the police reports and other various attachments that were part of the case?
Yes.
The medical records that you reviewed, you mentioned there were prior competency evaluations, but also Brown County Health Services records. Is that right?
Correct.
Was that in reference to a stay at Nicolet Psychiatric?
Correct.
All right. And when was that?
That spanned March of 2021 to April 2021.
All right. And you then indicated you also conducted a, personality test, or what was the fourth collateral source you reviewed?
I can administer an objective personality test. It's called the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, third edition. The acronym is MMPI-3.
Okay. So I want to then go through your report, if that's okay, Doctor, beginning on page 2. So one of the things you start with is called relevant history. Do you see that section of the report?
Yes.
And I guess why is it important to review the history as part of your NGI evaluation?
When gathering history about a defendant, we are touching on topics that are potentially relevant to the issue of criminal responsibility. Things like early childhood events, history of mental health treatment, substance use, any learning difficulties, difficulty working, all of this can potentially inform the issue of criminal responsibility.
Okay. And as part of that, did you review Misha Business's employment history?
Yes.
And I guess what did you note with respect to her employment history?
What I recall is that she has worked primarily in factory settings. Relevant to this evaluation was that she was working up until about a week before the underlying offenses.
Why is one's employment history relevant to an NGI evaluation?
It speaks to the prong of behavioral control. So later on, when we discuss the prongs of the NGI plea, one of them has to do with one's ability to conform their behavior with the requirements of the law. It's a capacity issue. So can a person do that under normal circumstances? And one's ability to work, maintain employment, show up, perform their job duties, that speaks to an individual's capacity to conform their behavior and meet the demands of daily living.
Okay. And you noted employment history fairly consistently up to about, I think you said a week before the offense?
Correct.
And you also reviewed Ms. Business's mental health history as well?
Yes.
As we talked about. As well, did you review her during the course of your clinical interview with Ms. Business, her current presentation?
Yes.
And I guess what is the importance of kind of noting, as you do, the current clinical presentation of a patient?
So that's another piece of information that informs the diagnosis that is required of the evaluation.
Okay. As part of the clinical interview with Ms. Business, do you get a narrative from her about the alleged offense?
To the extent that I was able, I did. Ms. Business recalled the time period leading up to the offenses, but then she reported that she had no memory for the offenses themselves, and she did not. She reported she did not regain memory until after her arrest.
Okay. With respect to Ms. Business recalling the time period leading up to the offense, what sort of information did she provide?
What I learned was that she had been living in Texas and returned to Wisconsin in early 2022 to tend to legal matters. She made a court appearance. I believe she was sentenced to 5 years probation. She was making arrangements to have her community supervision transferred to Texas so that she could resume caring for her newborn baby, who was in the care of her grandparents. She was working. She had started Suboxone treatment to maintain sobriety. And I understand that she struggled during this time period, was feeling what sounded like to me some alienation in the workplace, not feeling like she was connecting with her coworkers, and then began to, she reported to me she was hearing voices that were telling her to relapse on methamphetamine.
Okay. And some of those, you mentioned, you know, employment, you mentioned some arrangements with respect to child care. Why are some of those acts kind of relevant from an NGI evaluation standpoint?
Again, it speaks to the issue of one's capacity to conform their behavior. So all of those are very goal-directed tasks.
And those are all kind of leading up to the date of the offense?
Correct.
With respect to February 21st, 2022, specifically, did she have a narrative about sort of the timeline of events leading up to the offense?
Yes, on February 21st, 2022, she recalled that she was socializing with friends. They had come to the residence she was staying, and I believe they were smoking marijuana. She expressed an interest in finding methamphetamine, and so she said that she went on a quote, meth hunt, end quote.
Did she indicate whether she had ingested methamphetamine leading up to the homicide?
Yes, she told me that she took 52 hits of methamphetamine.
And did she also refer to that amount as, quote, a lot?
Yes.
All right. And did she indicate at some point that night meeting up with the crime victim, Mr. Therian?
Yes.
And then you indicated around the time of the alleged offense, she reported having no memory of that time.
Correct.
Did she, and then you indicated she regained her memory sort of in speaking with law enforcement?
Yes.
Was that professed amnesia of a concern to you?
It was notable. As I indicated in my report, I found her self-reported amnesia to be inconsistent with my review of the discovery material. So specifically, I observed her describe in great detail to the detective the details of that evening. So that stands in contrast to her self-reported amnesia in the present or at the time of the October interview.
You also indicated during the interview with Ms. Business, you
performed some psychological testing, is that right?
Yes.
What testing did you administer?
It was the MMPI-3.
What is the MMPI-3?
It's a very well-established psychological instrument dating back to the 1940s, very well-researched and respected. So this test can provide indication of different types of psychopathology or different types of mental illness. It also contains a number of validity indices to help psychologists understand the response style of the test taker.
So the validity indices, I think I said that right, that you mentioned, I guess, what does that mean?
What that means is that built into the test are several items that, when they're all combined at the end, they'll indicate if a person is answering questions in a forthright manner, if they're minimizing their symptoms, or potentially if they're exaggerating their symptoms.
So is this test like a true-false questions, or how does the test administer?
Correct. It's a true-false instrument.
And I guess what were some of your findings with respect to Ms. Shabusiness's performance on the MMPI test?
Well, first, let me be clear that the test does not say anything about Ms. Shabusiness's functioning. In February of 2022, it only provides information about her functioning at the time of the test. So what was relevant from that was that there was indication of symptom exaggeration. She responded to items. She endorsed a number of symptoms that genuine individuals with genuine mental illness would not endorse. The frequency, number of unusual symptoms that she acknowledged was greater than those with genuine mental illness. And then there was also indication of non-credible memory impairment built into those the results of those validity indices.
So I just want to go back a little bit. And this is a good point. So this testing is sort of in the moment as you're meeting with Ms. Shabusiness, is that right?
Correct.
But why is it still something you administer in the course of an NGI evaluation?
So getting back to that term of response style, that's very important to understand if the individual is being forthright in their account of information that they provide to me. And what I found with these elevated indices indicating the exaggerated descriptions of mental illness, unusual descriptions of mental illness, is that the information that was being reported to me needed to be interpreted with caution. Ms. Shabusiness's self-report could not be taken at face value.
And I think you state that anything that's not objectively observed should be closely scrutinized. Is that right?
Correct. So then it would be important to find other sources of information that would support what she's telling me versus relying just exclusively on her self-report.
Okay. And one of the phrases you used was endorsed symptoms. What does that mean?
For example, I'm just making this test example up, but I feel depressed. A true response would be an endorsement of that symptom.
So an endorsement is something somebody's telling you?
Yes.
All right. So based on the interview you had with Ms. Shabusiness, your review of some of those collateral sources of information, were you able to offer an opinion with respect to whether Ms. Shabusiness was suffering from a mental disease or defect?
Yes.
And what was, I guess, that opinion?
I reached the opinion that while she did have a mental health conditions, these did not appear to qualify as mental diseases and defects.
And in your report, you outlined, I guess, three mental health conditions. Is that right?
Correct.
What are those?
The diagnoses that I offered were methamphetamine-related use disorder, and that would that was applied in acknowledgement of Ms. Shabusiness's general use of methamphetamine in that time period. The diagnosis of methamphetamine intoxication was applied because she was using methamphetamine at the time of the crime. And then the final diagnosis I gave was methamphetamine-induced psychotic disorder. And I offered that one because Ms. Shabusiness was describing, and the records contained indication of paranoia. I think she made a comment about muscle rebuilding during the homicide, and this indicated to me the presence of psychotic symptoms, which I attributed to the recent methamphetamine use.
So, and that's a question I have. So mental health conditions, in your opinion, are different from mental diseases or defect?
Correct.
And the three diagnoses you offered, you stated those are not mental diseases or defects.
That is my understanding.
And why is that?
So if one ingests an intoxicant voluntarily, so they took it of their own volition, and if they were not naive to its effects, that would mean it's my understanding, based on the case law, that the defendant would be subsequently responsible for all alterations of thinking, judgment, behavior related to that intoxication.
I guess, were you aware of any information in the materials you reviewed that Bishop Business's methamphetamine use was anything but voluntary?
No.
And that, obviously, she reported a history of using methamphetamine to you?
Yes.
So I guess, were you of the opinion that she was not naive to its effect?
Correct, yes. And I'm also aware that she had psychotic symptoms in the context of methamphetamine use the year prior. So certainly she was aware of its effects, broadly speaking, to include psychosis.
So I want to pause just here. Methamphetamine use in general, I guess in your experience and in your education training, are you aware of some of the symptoms that may manifest as a result of that?
Yes.
And what are some of those?
Excessive energy, decreased need for sleep, and then oftentimes we see in the field of forensic psychology that it can induce psychotic symptoms, so misperceptions of reality and paranoia.
You also mentioned a year prior, there was a diagnosis of at the Nicolet Psychiatric Center. Is that right?
Yes.
And did you consider, I guess, the applicability or the appropriateness of a bipolar I disorder?
I did.
And what was your conclusion with respect to that propriety of that diagnosis?
After considering the diagnosis of bipolar I disorder, I did rule it out because I am aware that being intoxicated or having a methamphetamine-induced psychosis can look virtually similar or indistinguishable from a manic episode with psychosis. So the two look similar. And so what I would be looking for if I were to support a bipolar I disorder diagnosis is the presence of that psychosis and the mood elevation when there's no methamphetamine use present.
And are you aware of any of those symptoms absent in the context of methamphetamine use?
I'm not aware of a time ever that Ms. Shabusiness displayed psychotic symptoms or elevated mood outside of the methamphetamine use.
I guess you are aware, though, that bipolar I diagnosis was applied to Ms. Shabusiness in April of 2021.
Yes.
Are you aware, though, that there was concerns about recent methamphetamine use around that same time?
Yes, I believe that she tested positive for several drugs, including methamphetamine at that time.
So that's why that's not a diagnosis you are willing to give to Ms. Shabusiness.
Objection leading.
I'm just clarifying the testimony.
Overruled.
Thank you. So I guess in sum then, is there any mental disease or defect that you would diagnose Ms. Shabusiness with?
Yes. Also offered at Nicolet or Nicolette, I'm not sure the pronunciation. There was a diagnosis of, I believe it was polysubstance abuse or something to that effect, meaning multiple substances were being abused at that time. I believe that's an appropriate diagnosis for her. I do believe that, I believe firmly in the diagnoses that I offered in my report.
Okay. But those are not diagnoses that, I guess, are mental diseases or defect?
Correct.
Okay. Did you also then reach an opinion with respect to the, I guess, second question or the second part of the NJI evaluation, whether she was responsible for the conduct?
Yes.
All right. And what was that opinion?
I found insufficient support for the conclusion that as a result of a mental disease or defect that she either A, was unable to conform her behavior to the requirements of the law, or B, was unable to appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct.
What are some of the reasons you reached that conclusion?
Well, first, and most importantly, I was not able to find support for a diagnosis that would qualify as a mental disease or defect. So really, at that point, the analysis could end. That's a requirement of the plea. But I found in my report, I outlined various different factors, but focusing on the two issues, one's ability to conform their behavior to the requirements of the law and one's ability to appreciate wrongfulness. First of all, I did pull from her behavior outside of the moments of her known intoxication to observe that she was able to engage in very goal-directed behavior. So I assumed that any alterations in her behavioral control were directly related to the methamphetamine use. So that was the first issue. And the second issue having to do with wrongfulness, it was my opinion that she did demonstrate appreciation of wrongfulness. There were several comments that were made to law enforcement expressing apologies to the victim's sister, indication that she was trying to conceal the body was dismembered because she wanted to conceal it. These all speak to awareness of consequences, appreciation of wrongfulness, that she grasped wrongdoing had occurred.
Did you also consider, the validity of the professed amnesia for the time surrounding the offense?
Yes. I did not find the self-reported amnesia to be credible. First of all, there was that disconnect between what she was reporting to me in the interview as compared to the recollection she had during interview with the detective immediately thereafter. And then I also found indication in the results of the MMPI-3 that she was not, that she was reporting non-credible memory impairment.
I do have just a few more questions, Doctor. Your report was done in November of 2022, is that right?
Yes.
And subsequent to that time, have you had the chance to review any other NJI evaluations conducted in this case?
Yes.
And who authored those reports?
Diane Litton.
Okay. And in your review of Dr. Litton's report, did any of her findings or conclusions alter your opinion from November of 2022?
No.
I guess the same opinions you're testifying here to today?
It did not alter my opinion.
Okay. And then all of the opinions that you're offering here today, are they to a reasonable degree of professional certainty?
Yes.
Thank you, Doctor. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Cross-examination, Mr. Frelick.
Your Honor, would we be able to take a break right now or not?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll resume. All rise for the jury.
Thank you.
Doctor, you can step down. Right. We'll be in recess then for 10 minutes. I'd like the attorneys to return. Obviously, 10 minutes is a little bit before 3. I'd like to hear a little bit before 3 so I can speak to you a little bit about these instructions. Okay? So we're in recess.
Thank you.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.